You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and you said what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making the news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, we will discuss The Shield, the Bella Twins, Velvet Sky, and much more. Also, I'd like to send my condolences to the passing of Buddy Roberts, who passed away this past weekend. My name is Alex. And this week I will not be joined by David, but I am joined by a good friend of mine, Todd Martin. How are you doing this week, Todd?
I'm doing great. How are you, Alex?
I'm doing very well, doing very well. So let's go ahead and start the show. WWE. The Shield made his debut a couple of weeks ago, Todd, and week two into this program. What are your thoughts of the three talents and the impact they've made in WWE?
I've been encouraged by it thus far. I mean, I like the fact that they've debuted guys that are new and are talented in a prominent role that gives them the chance to get over the top level. That's something that they've rarely done with guys in recent years, is people, wrestlers tend to get, you know, bogged down in mid-card programs that limit their upward mobility. And with these guys, they've debuted them as an important act. They've set them up with top wrestlers to feud with, and they made them seem important. I very much like the presentation of them thus far. As far as the individual guys involved, I mean, Seth Rollins, Tyler Black, is a very capable wrestler. I think he's going to be able to hold up his end of things in terms of in the ring better than any of them, particularly in the early going. And then Dean Ambrose is a guy that has a lot of personality, a lot of charisma, sort of has a presence about him that makes him seem important. And I think you've seen that already, and I think you're going to see that more as they go forward. And Roman Reigns, I'm not as familiar with as the other two, not having seen him for as long of a period of time, but he has a good physical look. He has bloodlines that WWE likes, and you know, he has a physicality about him. So I've been very much encouraged by the act thus far.
Sometimes World Wrestling Entertainment will do something like, for example, the fact that now Ryback does longer interviews. That's something I question and something I wonder about. But it seems like they kind of match these guys up perfectly, with Tyler Black being the wrestler, I guess, Dean Ambrose being more of the personality, not to take anything away from his wrestling. And Roman Reigns is kind of the powerhouse, the brood of the group, and he's going to be given an opportunity to develop standing next to Dean and Seth Rollins. So it's kind of interesting, the makeup of the group, how kind of perfectly they fit together.
Absolutely, and I think that's the key to having any good group in wrestling, is you want to have guys that fill different roles effectively. Whether you look at the Horsemen, you had Ric Flair, who's sort of the leader and the best wrestler in the world, to use a phrase that's more familiar now. You had, you know, Arn Anderson, the sort of the technical wrestler, the sort of the enforcer of the group. You had Tully Blanchard, who was charismatic and, you know, sort of a good heel, a good hand in his own right. And Ole Anderson, sort of at that point, the veteran of the group that sort of fit together well. Or you look at Evolution, another group that was patterned up after the Horsemen relatively recently, where you had Batista, sort of the power of the group, Triple H, the guy who was in his prime, Ric Flair, the guy who was the older member of the group, and Randy Orton, who was sort of the young guy of the group. So I think With a group like that, you want to have guys that play distinct roles so that they stand out and are important in their own ways. If you have guys that are very similar, then some tend to overshadow others, and the group doesn't work as well as a whole.
What are your thoughts on the ending of Raw? It was kind of interesting, I guess, what they did with the whole lie detector test between CM Punk and The Miz. But the way the segment kind of broke down, it kind of reminded me a little bit of ECW, I guess, with the multiple run-ins with different acts who were all involved with each other. What kind of feelings did the ending of Raw give you, Todd?
I didn't have a particularly strong opinion one way or another. I guess I thought the lie detector thing was stupid, and Miz came across so irritating. So I didn't think the segment was working very well. And then they sort of used the big brawl to get out of it. And we've seen that sort of brawl a bunch of different times. And I think that was fine in and of itself. I didn't think either particularly positively or particularly negatively of it.
I must say, being a fan of ECW, I am kind of partial to those brawls where everyone gets involved. The Miz is a babyface. Is he working for you at all? Do you see any potential in this new act?
I can't say I do see a lot of potential in the new act. You know, it's funny. My colleague over at WrestlingObserver.com, Brian Alvarez, has a sort of an unhealthy obsession with the Miz. He just, he rants and raves, and everything Miz does really just sort of bugs him. So I almost want to take up for poor Miz because Brian hates him so much. And I think at a lot of times he's sort of been just fine, just sort of a guy that's there. And I think he even caught fire as a heel at one point. But I thought that turning him back face at this point, I thought it would work okay because I thought that they'd present him in a way that made him more likable and sort of covered up his less irritating characteristics. But if anything, they've moved more towards his irritating characteristics. So, I mean, I've found him, pretty darn unbearable as a babyface thus far. And I think if they want him to last in that role, and I expect him to just give up on it, but if they want him to act in that role, I mean, he really needs to be, a much more likable character. Well, I mean, I say that, but at the same time, I mean, I find Cena, at times unbearably irritating as a face. And they've given Sheamus some characteristics that are pretty darn irritating to me as well. So maybe it'll take. I mean, maybe people just, accept the baby faces doing WWE because they've cultivated a less discerning audience. But I think he's, pretty darn irritating.
Do you believe that part of the problem, Todd, is that The Miz doesn't have a decent heel to feud with at the time? Maybe if he had a polarizing heel, he could establish himself as a babyface as compared to, hey, I'm a babyface now, I team with the good guys on a regular basis.
Well, certainly a rival can help with that sort of thing. If you don't have sort of a reason to be turning face, it doesn't give you as much momentum. But, I mean, he's playing off of CM Punk, who's one of the best heels in the business. I don't really think the problem is so much of a lack of an adversary, so much as just the way that he's carrying himself is just not likable at all.
Recently, Todd, a picture came out of John Cena and Bryan Danielson at a high school reunion with the Bella Twins. Now, this picture was interesting to me for a few reasons, and the one I'm going to mention is that Bryan Danielson has always been known as the independent guy. He's the independent wrestler that came up, John Cena knowing he's the epitome of what World Wrestling Entertainment is today. But in dating, they share women who are genetically similar. Is the Bryan Danielsons and the Dean Ambroses, the Tyler Blacks, do you think that this is WWE opening the more doors to independent wrestlers, or are these outliers and WWE is looking for the best independent wrestlers more so than just independent wrestlers?
With independent guys, it's funny because a few years ago, WWE, you could tell when they brought up Danielson, they brought up Low-Key, that they have the idea of independent guys as these uncharismatic flippy-do guys that, were boring and uninteresting. And they said this about Daniel Bryan over and over and over again. I mean, that was sort of cool shtick on him. And they said the same thing about Low-Key. And I think they had the idea that the indies were this place where, like a bunch of Roderick Strongs. I mean, no offense to Roderick Strong, who I think is a great wrestler, but
I think you bagged on Roderick last time you were on our show, too, Todd, since the beginning. No offense, Roderick, but every time I'm on this radio show, I'll bag on him.
Poor Roderick Strong, because I really do. I enjoy his matches, but, he isn't a guy that I would pick as a guy to be a main eventer on the national level. Throw in someone else. Who's another example? Dean Malenko, great wrestler. I mean, from a different generation, but great wrestler. A guy that, has very fun matches, but doesn't have sort of the personality to get over on the national level, in my opinion. So I think WWE had the opinion that there are lots of guys like that. But then they saw Daniel Bryan, and they're like, wow, this guy's as good as anyone we have. Let's sign some more guys like this. And as they started bringing in the Claudio Castagnoli's, Antonio Cesaro, and they started bringing in the Tyler Blacks, Seth Rollins, and they brought in Chris Hero, now in FCW as Cassius Ohno. They brought these guys forward, and they realized, wow, there are a lot of guys on the indies that not only are very good wrestlers, but are guys that have personality that can get over the top level. And I think from this point on, you're going to be looking at WWE looking very closely at the top guys in the indie scene. And I think it's going to be a lot easier for guys in the indie scene to make the jump to WWE. And it's a smart move by WWE because that's where the best talent outside of WWE is.
I agree with you, but I always take this controversial stance, Todd, is that a wrestler, El Generico, I do not see him being someone that they would be interested in. Now, I've heard from different people they are interested in him, and we saw a report go up on PW Insider that World Wrestling Entertainment is interested in him. But isn't he kind of like the antithesis of the talent that they weren't interested in? I mean, when you talk about his body and we don't know of his promo ability. There's a lot of questions when you look at El Generico. What you do have is an incredible wrestler, but there's a lot that you don't know. Would El Generico be a good gamble for World Wrestling Entertainment?
I don't know if they would let Generico get over. Because, I mean, they'd almost certainly rebrand him. And I think he actually might have more potential in a different character if they sort of put them up. But the move would also be risky because obviously so much is tied to this character that he's been doing for so many years. I think that if I had to bet on whether he would succeed in WWE, I would probably bet against it because of a lot of the reasons you brought up, that he doesn't have a WWE physique. And so he's sort of a question mark. But with that said, if it were my call, I would absolutely give the guy a chance to get over the top level. I think he has a physical charisma about him, an ability to make people connect with him and to sympathize with him and like him that is as good as anybody in the business right now. And I think that the guy absolutely could get over that WWE if you gave him a chance. So he is definitely a guy that I would bet on if it were my call. But if our betting on what WWE will do, I would bet against it.
TNA Wrestling. Christian York recently won TNA's Gut Check, and now he's getting opportunities to wrestle against Jeff Hardy on television, Bobby Roode on television. My question to you, Todd, is should Christian York have been the first Gut Check winner? I mean, this seems like this is what we expected from this program.
Yeah, I mean, he'd certainly be a better choice than the guys that they chose at the beginning, because they chose some people that they then, number one, they weren't that good, and number two, they then just shipped them off to developmental, so they didn't make the impact. So I think definitely the better model would have been, as you suggest, to present it like Christian York, where he's already engaged with top wrestlers and being presented to someone that's important. With that said, I still would have gone with someone with more upside potential than Christian York. Christian York, to me, it sort of makes for a nice story, but I don't think he's going to become a superstar anywhere, in his career. I just don't think that's in the card. So, I mean, if it were my call, I would have wanted the first winner to be someone that you had big plans for and you thought that, they could become a big star. Someone, sort of you're cherry-picking who you think is the best guy, not signed to WWE or ROH to bring in.
Were you impressed of any, because the Gut Check guys that won, Sam Shaw, Alex Silvo, and Taylor Hendricks, they all have spent down in Ohio Valley Wrestling, and they've come back up to the main roster, and they performed at the Thanksgiving Day show. Were you impressed with anyone's performances? And also, did you like any of the progress that any of the wrestlers had made?
No, not really. I didn't think I didn't think any of them distinguished themselves. I wasn't terribly impressed with them as a group going in, and I mean, it's harsh, but I mean, just to answer your question directly, I haven't been impressed by any of them, no.
Yeah, it's very interesting that some of the guys they've selected to bring into the Gut Check, I want to get into the quality of the matches in the next topic, but specifically, it seems like for every guy that they've brought up, it seems like you could think of maybe someone else that they could have brought up. I mean, Taylor Hendricks, I mean, when you hear the name Taylor Hendricks, I mean, she's not even one of the top women wrestlers I think you would think of in wrestling, and maybe not even one of the top women wrestlers that maybe have appeal to the males, and on top of that, maybe they already have a lot of women in the company already. It's just very interesting, the talent selection. On one hand, we have World Wrestling Entertainment that's able to bring in the top indie names, and unfortunately, it doesn't look like TNA has that same ability.
Yeah, and I know that TNA has gone after guys that are considered higher level of talent. The problem is that they're not willing to offer particularly good deals, and they're not willing to offer big, sort of guarantees of letting guys in. So there's only so many guys that – there's only a certain level of guy that you're going to get to sort of come in for – I don't know what the exact figures are throwing around on, but let's say $500, $1,000 for essentially a tryout. I think if you're talking about, higher level competition – they're going to a higher level of ability. You're going to want some more guarantees, and you're going to want to bring in guys that have more potential. And I think in that regard, TNA has been sort of penny wise and dollar foolish in the sense that they've been willing to. I mean, they're sort of like a poorly constructed sports team where you bring in the high caliber free agents with the same amount of money to developmental. And because of that, and in sports, obviously that would mean the draft or, in signing international amateur talent. And when you don't do that, it becomes more difficult to build for the future. And TNA, in not willing to pony up a higher amount of money for top promising independent talent, has let them instead go to WWE. And it's not that they've had, there's sort of been a problem with filling out the roster with new, fresh talent. And, if you look at the few guys that they have brought in along those lines, like an Austin Aries, like a Samoa Joe, those guys have done great for themselves. And unfortunately, there aren't enough of those sorts of guys that TNA is elected to bring in.
Todd, are you ready for a Wes Briscoe and Garrett Bischoff main event with Kurt Angle? These two guys at the Thanksgiving show had a gut check match. It was actually Wes Briscoe's gut check. And these two guys went out there and had a terrible match. Is TNA lowering the standard, lowering the bar for what's expected for a talent to appear on television? And are you ready for these guys to be major players in the company?
I wouldn't say that they're lowering the bar. I think that those guys aren't particularly good, but they don't stand out as, not capable to be on national television. I think that there are plenty of guys that have been featured on WWE and TNA television over the years that are comparable in that way. With that said, I mean, neither of those guys have shown very much. And, Garrett Bischoff, it's not his fault, but him being the son of Eric Bischoff is a severe turnoff to a lot of people. I mean, it has the air of nepotism about it, even if he's not getting very much of a push. And he's not that great of a talent to begin with. So I think that the Garrett Bischoff experiment hasn't proven to be a particularly successful one thus far. And as far as Wes Briscoe goes, evidently, by the way, they paired him with Kurt Angle, and they've set him up for a potential run with Aces and Eights down the line. They clearly see a lot in the guy. I haven't seen enough to feel like I should be, completely dismissive of him, but I'll just say I haven't seen what they've seen in him to this point.
That was incredibly nice, I guess. I really thought the match was very bad, and it seems like if you have a deal with an Ohio Valley who you're trusting to develop your talent, I don't understand why part of, maybe they are down at Ohio Valley training, but it doesn't quite seem like they're ready for the momentum that Kurt will be able to give them, because Kurt is a legitimate main event guy, and I think that being in the ring with him gives you a ton of credibility. And, are Garrett and Wes going to be able to take the opportunity or the future potential that Kurt's going to be able to give them by wrestling them?
If you're picking someone to elevate with a interaction with Kurt Angle, Wes Briscoe probably wouldn't be one of my top selections. But as I said, I just haven't seen that much of him to where I'm ready to just sort of dismiss him outright. They see something in him, and we'll see. I mean, I, I'm It's not exactly like I'm sticking up for the guy. I'm just saying I'm still in a wait and see approach.
Maybe he did his post up moves with a chair. Isn't that how Yingling got into the league or whatever? He did post up moves against a chair.
And it worked out great for him in the long run.
Well, there you go.
Another former Wizards great.
The return of Velvet Sky. Todd, this is what the TNA Knockouts division has needed, correct? The return of Velvet Sky?
Well, you say that like I'm supposed to bury her. I like Velvet Sky. I think that she's a worthwhile person to have in there, and I think she's attractive and she has a charisma about her. She's obviously not the best wrestler in the world, but she's someone that if I were TNA, I would want, and I think they wanted her. It's just a matter of money. So they were, you know, evidently able to come to terms that were acceptable for both sides. I'm in favor of bringing her back.
You know, I mean, not necessarily a barrier, Todd, but I mean, it seems like it's interesting that TNA is going to make acquisitions in the Knockouts division, where it seems like they've recently cut the Knockouts tag titles. It seems like they're running out of programming for the TNA Knockouts to do. They generally get one pay-per-view match a pay-per-view, and it seems like bolstering their roster this time is kind of an interesting move to me, especially with the talent that we've seen featured on the programming for years. I mean, I'm not saying anything about Velvet Sky's talent. She is very charismatic. Her wrestling ability wasn't, I mean, she doesn't present to the table what a Sarah Del Rey or a Tara present to the table wrestling-wise, but she was incredibly popular. But is this the type of talent that TNA should sign, or maybe they should sign a new woman who has wrestling ability or a different type of charisma?
I feel sort of harsh in saying, because I know there are people that like women's wrestling, and I think in like an alternate reality, like if you're in Japan, like maybe I'd be more open to having like a women's division that meant something. But I feel like in American wrestling, we've been conditioned for such a long period of time to think of women wrestlers as being, you know, just inconsequential in the ring, being bad wrestlers and just being eye candy, that number one, I think it would take a lot of time to condition people to think otherwise and for it to matter in a way that would benefit business. And number two, there's the expectations of what they're supposed to look to at this point, that if you had good wrestlers that weren't as attractive, I think a lot of people would reject it because of how, you know, how far they've gone in the other direction. So while, again, in sort of like an abstract world of creating my own wrestling federation, you know, there might be something to be said for having a women's division like that. But as currently constituted, I think you're really better off just limiting it and having it be short and just sort of like a novelty, you know, extra, or even getting rid of it altogether. And if you're gonna have it in that sort of role and you're just going to have a handful of women that are going to come on, I mean, Velvet Sky to me is as fine as any in that capacity.
I mean, women's professional wrestling has always been presented as a niche thing in this country as far as in the national promotions. I mean, there was never a national promotion in America that presented serious women's wrestling. It's always kind of been a niche. So, I mean, I don't think it's negative at all to say that, you know, if you choose to present women's wrestling, maybe you don't need the biggest roster in the world, and TNA nor WWE have the biggest roster in the world. But I just found it interesting that they would bring back Velvet Sky instead of giving opportunities to new women. Velvet has shown that she can get over on the television, so I guess that's cool as well. Wild card topic number one. Pro Wrestling Noah had a huge shakeup this past weekend as Kenta Kobashi, from what I understand from the Wrestling Observer, was fired. And some of the top talent have said that they're not going to sign their new contracts. And I guess they're going to follow him into free agency, or I guess we'll see what's going to come to this story. What do you think this will do to the Japanese wrestling scene? Because the first thing I instantly thought of, Todd, is now these New Japan Eye pay-per-views are available in America, and there may be opportunities for us to see some of the NOAH talent coming into New Japan on a regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a potential positive. I mean, they've been able to, they've cooperated from time to time anyway, so I mean, it's not as big of a potential hurdle as it would have been at some points when there was a real, you know, sort of a fine delineating line between the promotions in Japan. But, I mean, it's just sort of a sad story in the sense that Noah had something going. You know, there was pretty darn good in the, you know, in the early to mid 2000s and then into sort of the end of that decade, when Kobashi was still able to go, and, you know, they had Misawa when he was still alive, and they were able to sort of, you know, it obviously was at a lower level than All Japan was before the death of Giant Baba and the departure of those guys from the company, but it was still something that, you know, was having some success. And in recent years, New Japan sort of passed them by. The Kobashi, you know, Misawa obviously tragically died. Kobashi can't perform at the level that he used to, and he can't wrestle very often for that matter. So, I mean, it's just sort of thing, and they've tried to, you know, sort of fill things up with new guys. And, I mean, they've picked some guys that have been good, but they just haven't been able to take off for whatever reason, whether it's size or timing or, you know, for whatever reason. They just haven't been able to fill up the cards with a new generation of talent. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, you're looking at a promotion that isn't going to be around at any significant level for a very much longer. And I don't know that it's really going to fill up another. It's not like before where you could fill up another promotion with those guys. I think they're just going to sort of have to, you know, scatter and either work independently or work for other promotions within the scene. It's just, you know, it's for a country that really was very successful in wrestling for a very long period of time. Just like in the U.S., it's sort of a sad and worn down scene with, you know, very few promotions that are doing very well.
You know, it's unfortunate that in 2009, Mitsuharu Misawa, who was the birther, I guess, of professional wrestling, Noah, after he departed All Japan Pro Wrestling, and now Kenta Kobashi, who was the ace in the early 2000s of pro wrestling, Noah. I mean, he had all the great matches with all the top guys and cemented his legacy as one of the greatest pro wrestlers ever. I mean, it's an unfortunate that this is going to signal possibly the end of that promotion, is seeing one of their greatest talents get fired in such a way where it's almost like the company's admitting defeat, that we can no longer pay this legend, because in Japan, from what I understand, is if you're a legend, they keep you around because that's tradition. And it's kind of unfortunate that they're releasing this guy because they can no longer pay him.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why you see such a strong reaction with a bunch of people threatening to leave the company. I mean, you wouldn't see that in the U.S. because, as you mentioned, in Japan, there's a long-term culture of a lot of loyalty towards a company and expecting the company to have a lot of loyalty towards you for tenure. It's sort of a respect for people that have been around for a long time, respect for experience, and also sort of respect for tenure. And the expectation has been for you know, on companies that if a guy is with you for a very long period of time and, you know, really, you know, sort of commits and does a lot for you, that you're going to be kept on and, you know, used in other roles after you can't perform at a certain level. And for them to let go a guy like Kobashi, who was literally more instrumental to the success of that promotion than anyone else because they couldn't afford him anymore. I mean, it's a decision that, I mean, there's no way they took that lightly. I mean, that's a decision that they had to have felt, you know, terrible about, but, you know, obviously felt there's just a necessity to be able to keep going, to going financially. So, I mean, it says a lot about where they are that they would make a move like that.
Wild card topic number two. Tony Mameluke this past weekend announced his retirement. I think the thing that overshadows Tony Mameluke's career, Todd, is the number of concussions he reportedly has endured in his career. Does this kind of make you squeamish or kind of sad about Tony Mameluke's overall career?
I mean, it's obviously a problem. I guess with him, I just sort of accepted it. I remember hearing about that, you know, very early on in his career, you know, like even when he was first getting started towards the end of ECW, that he was suffering a number of concussions there. And, I mean, we haven't really seen the results of him, the sense that he's still around. He's not really someone that's sort of on the, you know, the sort of forefront of things. So you don't really see a decline in his physical abilities or what's going on behind the scenes. So I wouldn't say that, you know, that it sort of stands out to me, but I suspect that, unfortunately, behind the scenes, he's struggling from, you know, a lot of issues with that. If he was, you know, he was a guy that was on the smaller side, and, you know, he took a lot of bumps, and he took a lot of, you know, a lot of physical punishment over the course of his career, particularly, particularly early on. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully he has a good life after wrestling. But, you know, those sorts of issues can linger.
You know, concussions kind of just came into my life. I'd say 2 or 3 years ago, I think, is when I first started really hearing about it. Well, I guess it'd be longer than that. It'd been around the time of Chris Benoit's death. But, I mean, Tony Mamaluke, 1999 and the early 2000s, I mean, this was a guy you were hearing about having regular concussions. It seemed like almost, you know, every 3 to 4 months you would hear about him having concussion. And even at the time, I guess from football retirements where guys would retire after so many concussions, I mean, he was a guy I was kind of concerned about even back then before I knew the full spectrum of what concussions can do to you later in life.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an education process. And that was definitely towards the beginning of the period when concussions started to be something that people were paying attention to. I mean, sort of you would hear about it, but the sort of the idea of the thought of it was, well, you know, you sort of be out of it for a period of time, and then, you know, you take a little bit of time off, and then you're put back into it. And it was only, you know, I mean, maybe my perception is wrong on this, but I sort of think of the retirements of Troy Aikman and Steve Young in the NFL due to, you know, at a relatively young ages, although, I mean, they were still relatively old as well. But, I mean, for the NFL, they should have had a few more years due to, you know, repeated concussions. And that was that was the point when it started becoming something that people started thinking about more within the context of retirement. And then within wrestling and football, for that matter, it started being thought of in terms of later life repercussions when you started looking at suicides, you know, murders, crimes, you know, people having, you know, very tough post-wrestling times, whether it was Chris Benoit or Mike Awesome or a number of other guys who committed suicide, you know, Junior Seau in the NFL, you know, who committed suicide. And, you know, the thought is that the toll of concussions over a long period of time led to depression, led to, you know, a feeling of, you know, a loss of memory, of sort of problems that made people feel that life wasn't worth living anymore. And obviously that toll that, you know, I think most people would feel is too strong of a toll to pay for, you know, sort of the fame and enjoyment that wrestlers get out of being, you know, out of professional wrestling.
Today are the birthdays of Exotic, Agent Street, and Brooke Tessmacher. Now, at the time we're recording this, which may give this away when we're recording this, but those are the two birthdays today, Todd. Now, if you could...
What a birthday day.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. Now, Todd, if you had the opportunity to step into either performer's shoes, who would you choose and why? Brooke Tessmacher or Exotic, Agent Street?
I don't see any way of giving you that answer to that question. I mean, there are answers in my head, but I mean, I'll say Brooke Tessmacher, and I'll leave it at that.
Exotic, Agent Street. He was a, I think you could call him a journeyman wrestler. If there was one territory that kind of you signal Adrian Street was more than the other. Is there one, Todd?
I mean, obviously he was a forerunner in, well, I don't want to say forerunner because it's not like it's something that took off, but he was, you know, one of the early, I will say he was one of the early characters that was sort of overtly, you know, openly homosexual as opposed to sort of playing off of the idea of what society thought of homosexuality in a negative sense. And, you know, thankfully, over time, his attitudes have changed. Sort of playing on the homophobia of the audience has become a less effective method of getting heat. But Adrian Street, aside from that gimmick, was, you know, legitimately behind the scenes reputed to be a very tough guy as well.
And it's unfortunate. I remember him from a lot of compilations early, in, I guess, in the '80s. but I can't really think of what territory, and that's unfortunate. I can't really pin down what territory I guess I know him most from. I think he did some work in Continental, but he was definitely a very good performer, kind of in the lineage, I guess, of Gorgeous George, where he was a very feminine type wrestler, but when he got in the ring, he was very aggressive, very similar to Goldust. Brooke Tessmacher, on the other hand, ECW dancer, has had quite the career in TNA. Yeah, did she end up a little bit better than what you thought she would be when she was just, I guess, an ECW dancer?
Oh, definitely. I mean, she's not a great wrestler by any means, but I mean, she is. She's become much better in the ring. You know, I think she's, you know, advanced to where I'd say she's okay. You know, for a woman wrestler in 2012, based on the standards of what most of the other people are, and she's sort of taken to wrestling. I would definitely say that she's done, you know, relatively well for herself.
There's another pro wrestler that stuck out that had a birthday to me today was Shibata, but I didn't know if I think it'd have been too easy to select Shibata out of those two tops. I wanted to give you a tough question. All right, Todd. So this is the time that we end the show, but first I have something that I guess I have to get on my chest. This is something we do weekly. It was announced this past weekend that Northern Illinois will be going to the Orange Bowl, and during it, a lot of the commentators were arguing, I guess, non-existent sides, and I guess this is something we see regularly. But do you think it's, I kind of get frustrated when Kurt Herbstreit is the person that I'm thinking of when I'm saying this. Why even approach the other side of the aisle? Why not just say, hey, listen, Northern Illinois made it for this reason and state the point instead of arguing the non-existent point?
I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, Kirk was able to anticipate, I guess, the outrage of Northern Illinois. And I imagine since, you know, people were, because I heard reports earlier in the week that Northern Illinois had an opportunity to play in a BCS Bowl. But when they did, I felt like a lot of the guys on the television, they argued the other point, but none of the other commentators were making it about how what an outrage it was that Northern Illinois were making it. And people were saying, well, you know, did they deserve to go? But there was no counterpoint to that point. Like, no one was making that point other than the people arguing that point.
Okay, so you're saying that nobody was really criticizing Northern Illinois, but people were bringing it up to then respond to a criticism that wasn't happening?
Todd, I got so frustrated that I can't even explain it properly.
Is what I just said
yes.
talking about?
Yes.
Okay. I haven't heard a lot of criticism either. I think, hypothetically, there might have been criticism if it were a situation where there were a bunch of strong teams and people were like, oh, I really want to see this, you know, this great Texas team play in a major bowl game. But this year in college football, there really weren't that many, you know, excellent teams. So I think most people sort of accepted that, you know, Northern Illinois, at least they were undefeated, you know, sort of something different than a lot of these, a lot of these other teams that were, you know, that were just, you know, sort of generic, you know, middle-of-the-run two-loss teams that nobody was particularly impressed by. So, yeah, I mean, I think that was the reason why people didn't respond as much. And I mean, I guess if you're talking head, you have to sort of come up with things to sort of talk about. And I'm sort of guilty of that sometimes myself, where I'll perceive that there are going to be people making a certain argument. And so I'll make a counter-argument to what I think people are going to be saying, even if I haven't seen a bunch of people say that at this point.
How dare you, Todd. Other than the Holiday Bowl, which UCLA will play Baylor, what bowl are you most looking forward to? Because you're a UCLA grad, so obviously you're going to be very excited for that bowl game. But what other game are you excited for, Todd?
I think Oregon and Kansas State should be a fun game. I think that Oregon's probably the best team in college football this year in spite of their one loss. So I think that should be a fun game. And I think Alabama and Notre Dame is fine as a national championship, but it doesn't jump out at me. But I'll watch that game. And as I said, it's not a great slate of games. So I mean, those are the ones that stand out the most to me.
Yeah, what's interesting is actually last year's Fiesta Bowl matchup between Oklahoma State and Stanford ended up being a really good game, too. So I definitely think they'll repeat it with this Oregon-Kansas State game. I think that's going to be a very exciting game. Well, thank you, Todd, very much for joining me. You can hear Todd talk professional wrestling every week at the Wrestling Observer. And if you're a mixed martial arts fan, he posts every UFC show for Los Angeles Times blog. And also, Todd contributes regularly to SureDog.com. Thank you very much, Todd, for joining me.
My pleasure.
Don't forget to check out the OWW website at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you are there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can email us at radio@OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. And make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all the program updates and announcements. We will also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Until next time, this is Alex, and we hope you enjoy the programming, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.